Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that's still not going to repeat the Tory attack lines. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda, Steve Haynes.
Hi, Corey.
So, it's a shorter episode than usual on the decision of the Crown Prosecution Service not to press charges on Conservative Party officials for electoral spending irregularities. Now, this happened a week or two ago, but it's something that we said could have quite a big effect on the election outcome if the decision had gone the other way. So I think it's worth talking about. It's also a case study in how not to talk about a political issue and how not to approach a political issue. You'll have to keep listening to find out why. In this episode, our thinking on the decision is going to be influenced, as ever in matters political and legal, by Financial Times blogger David Alan Green. As you'll find in the show notes, he's written articles on this, wrote an article last year, and there's a quite good Twitter feed, or Twitter thread, I think they call them, don't they? In case you're not quite sure on the details, in probably about 15 or 20 seats in the 2015 election campaign, there were concerns amongst concerns about the election spending in those seats. There's a difference in UK election law between national campaign spend, that's money that's spent by national parties on a national campaign, and by local parties campaigning in their own seats. So there's rather strict rules in the last 6 weeks of an election campaign of what MPs can, or parliamentary candidates can and cannot spend money on. So for instance, Birmingham Northfield, where you're based, Birmingham Southwark, where I'm based, if you're Richard Burden or on his campaign, if you're on Steve McCabe's campaign, there's very strict limits on what you can and cannot spend money on. You can't have national campaign spend going on something that's a local campaign. So for instance, if the National Labour HQ were to print a load of Steve McCabe stickers or something, or Steve McCabe leaflets, that would have to come under Steve McCabe's local campaigning budget. It couldn't come under national campaigning budget. Now, the issue that the Tories had in the 2015 campaign is that they were busing in activists on a campaign battle bus. They were paying for activists to stay in hotels overnight. What Michael Crick found, now he did some quite good investigative work for Channel 4, he found that a lot of these activists, they weren't just giving out national campaign leaflets, often they were campaigning for local candidates. So they were either giving out local leaflets with a local candidate mentioned on them. This obviously is a bit blurry in the law, and the Electoral Commission found that actually the Tories have a case to answer, and they fined the Conservatives £80,000. And that was I think it was 80,000, and that was the highest fine the Electoral Commission's ever fined a party in its two decades of existence. These cases were then referred to the Crown Prosecution Service to see if there was any criminal wrongdoing. A couple of weeks ago, it turns out that the CPS thought there was not criminal wrongdoing. David Alan Green has written saying that essentially he thinks this is the correct decision, essentially because it's very difficult to find out exactly what is national spend and exactly what is local spend. You might think it's actually quite straightforward, but actually the law is quite confusing.
Yeah, and that's very much is the case. So to go back to the example where you were talking about, say, where National Labour printed out some Steve McCabe stickers, that almost certainly would fall under the banner of local spending, because it's really specific to Birmingham Surrey Oak. It's Steve McCabe, it's their candidate. If it was Vote Labour stickers, which were then given to Birmingham Surrey Oak to campaign with, does that count or not? So this is just very basic kind of campaigning stuff, with, you know, this is before we even start talking about social media spend and things like that, kind of complicate the issue quite substantially.
And especially in marginal seats, because if you think about, obviously, in the electoral system we have, you've got the election, whoever, the governing party will be decided by the outcome of what happens in the 50, 100 most marginal seats. Although they are local campaigns, you're going to find national campaigning teams going to those marginal seats a lot, and they're going to want to print a lot of literature. They're going to want to have lots of activists coming in from all over the country. And so, again, what is national, what is local gets very, very blurred. The other thing you have, I think, with trying to put these figures together is that the people who are compiling the accounts for local campaign parties, they tend to be well-meaning amateurs. You know, they aren't professionals doing it. And actually, if you read Chris Mullin's diaries when he was an MP, there are a few cases of the Electoral Commission being a little bit heavy-handed with, you know, little Gladys, who's the treasurer of such and such Labour Party or such and such Conservative Party, who is not a trained accountant and yet is having to fill out lots of accounts. And obviously, just sheer human error might well mean that you overlook some things, or sheer muddled or good faith, you might not know what's national and what's local.
Yeah, I mean, and I think this is the thing with when it comes to this particular breach of the rules that the Conservatives have done, is that the result was essentially, it was decided that the expense forms that they had submitted were deemed inaccurate, so they were wrong. And they have been fined, and the Conservatives have paid that fine, therefore admitting that they were wrong, but that there was no deliberate intent to mislead or deliberate attempt to be dishonest when filling in those forms. And that there is the cut and dried reason as to why you're not going to see prosecutions of this. Because if you've got deliberate intent to mislead, then that's a very different kettle of fish to, as you say, little old Gladys, the Conservative Party treasurer, getting it slightly wrong because the rules are very muddled. The key thing, as I say, is that there's no deliberate, there is no evidence of a deliberate intent to mislead in any of the seats where this has been investigated.
Yeah, and that's the key thing that you would need to for there to be the basis of any criminal prosecution. Mm-hmm. And it's just that deliberate criminal intent just isn't there.
Yep.
One of the things that David Alan Green says in his article and his Twitter is that perhaps the electoral law on this is very, very muddled. If one was being cynical, you could say it was deliberately muddled, so it is quite hard to prosecute anyone. Shall we go on and then just quickly talk about how not to, why this is a quite good case study and how not to approach issues? Because actually, if you want to talk about how there should be a clear demarcation between local and national spend, fine. Campaign to make the law clearer. If you want to talk about the effect of money in the electoral campaign, fine, let's talk about that. We haven't really talked much on Not Enough Champagne, but on our sister podcast for the Birmingham Fabians, LJ and I have been talking about the West Midlands mayoral election. Andy Street spent a reputed £1 million on leaflets. That was absolutely fine because that was outside the 6-week window before the spending limits are brought in. So completely within the rules, maybe we should have a conversation about whether there should be national spending limits or even spending limits outside the 6-week period in a mayoral election. But we haven't really had that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, and again, when you kind of take this back to that same point and take it to the general elections, one of the ways that, you know, any political party that engages in community politics and kind of the ground a serious ground game operation is they will be putting out leaflets really regularly, the entire point of which is to get out name recognition, make it look like you're very active in the area so that people are thinking about you when it eventually does come to that blitz period of the 6 weeks of general election campaign.
Yeah, it turns out that candidate who's been pointing moodily at potholes for 3 months, turns out they are actually the candidate in that seat.
And it's one of those things where, should that be capped in some way? Should there be a yearly cap in every seat? Should there be even more focus? Because, as you say, if you don't have that sort of thing in place, what you end up with is Andy Street situation where a load of leaflets and things can go out whenever, as long as they've got the money to spend on it. It's just standard campaigning practice, but it's not regulated, it's not controlled, and there's no limit as to what they can and can't do.
And again, it's not that there was no wrongdoing at all, it's more that it wasn't criminal.
Yeah.
That's why the Electoral Commission fined them. And what happens, and again, David Alan Green mentions this as well, is that there was wishful thinking by a lot of people on the left who thought that, well, the Tories only have a majority of 6. They're being investigated in 15, maybe 20 seats. Well, if that's the case then, and we have to have by-elections in these seats, that could wipe out the Tory majority. We could have a Labour government. And that meant that the hashtag on Twitter was Tory election fraud, and lots of people who you'd hope might know better, and we're not going to name names, are we, Owen Clark? But lots of people trying to make a big play out of trying to get prosecutions, but actually there wasn't much chance of there being a prosecution.
Yeah, it's very much a case of wishful thinking of the highest degree. Basically, these are people who don't understand election law, to be quite honest. Most of the Twitterati, which is where most of this kind of focus on, oh, maybe we'll be able to overturn the majority, was. It was on Twitter. Really that au fait with the ins and outs of election law in any form. They're not necessarily the sorts of people who go around reading David Alan Green posts on the matter either. They're much more likely to be reading The Canary. You know, if you don't have that basis or understanding of electoral law, you are just going to end up throwing yourself into a situation without any real understanding, and then kind of applying a very black and white moralistic worldview in that if the Tories are being accused of this and it is therefore a bad thing, they should go to jail for it. The reality is election law is complex, very, very complex. And it's very difficult to make a case of any sort. I mean, the last example we have really of anybody being properly held to account through election law was Phil Wullis up in.
I did just drop the Phil bomb.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and again, you have to be such a stupid, depraved, moral coward such as Phil Wullis to actually be found guilty of this. And. Well, this was going to be a minisode, but now it's going to be a 2-hour. but essentially, Phil Wullis said that the Lib Dem candidate was in league with Islamic extremists who wanted to kill him.
Yeah, an outright blatant lie. Yeah. And, you know, and all kinds of slander and libel issues thrown in there as well. Hmm. And it took that kind of level of absolute kind of ineptitude and idiocy and to actually even trigger the notion that somebody might get done for this. You know, what we were seeing in the Tory election expenses scandal was nowhere near that. At best, it was a slap on the wrist, as has been the case. Or at worst, really, in all likelihood, what would probably happen is some election agents went to jail. The candidates themselves would have been let off because they're not held responsible for those sorts of things. In all likelihood, no by-elections would have been called.
It's wishful thinking brought on by partisanship. Mm-hmm. And again, if you want to talk about the Tories having more money, well, let's have that conversation. You want to talk about trying to make some sort of limit, sort of cap, let's have that conversation. We can't have that conversation on the podcast now because you brought up the Phil bomb and now I'm just filled with
rage.
All those years of managing to suppress my rage have gone back up. None of the parties in their manifestos have any reference to election spending at all. Do you think they're going to try and clarify what they mean by local national spending at all as a result of this?
I don't think the parties will. I think the Electoral Commission is going to. Not necessarily as a result of the what the Tories were up to, but more as a result of the way that social media is becoming a much more important way to reach voters. The Tory campaign is heavily targeted on certain areas, and there is a definite blurred line of if it's CCHQ paying for it, but it's targeted at, you know, Birmingham Northfield, say, is that a local campaign? Or is it a national campaign? And there's an awful lot of work that needs to be done to define the issues of digital campaigning.
And one of the Tory candidates, actually, I can't remember who it was, he said that the Electoral Commission should be disbanded. Do you think there's any chance of that? Or is that just someone who's a little bit angry and frustrated?
I think that's someone who's a little bit angry and frustrated. I think even a Jeremy Corbyn-led Labour Party would be able to make serious hay with the Conservatives getting rid of the elections watchdog. It would be a very foolhardy move.
Great. So we are back on Sunday and we have an episode on the party's manifestos. Our theme tune was Plucky Good Times by Dave Depper and our logo is designed by James Cram. You can follow him on Twitter @James Cram. I'm @PaperbackWriter.
I'm @CentreRadical.
Happy canvassing!